Good afternoon, everyone. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, Chuck and Julie Show, Truth Straight Up.
And it is, what day is this today, Chuck?
It's Party Friday. Yes, it's Party Friday. So get out your party hats, your Corona beers,
yeah,
and have for Friday afternoon fun. We got a great show, don't we, Julie?
Yeah, we do. We have Steve House, one of the GOP candidates, primary candidates in CD6. Before we bring Steve up, I want to get a little bit of housekeeping stuff. We always want to let folks know we love having you join us live. The best way to do it is go to chuckandjulie.com, and then that's going to send you to the BBS site, and that'll send you everywhere you can connect.
But hit the live button.
But if you want to see us, maybe you don't. We look good today, though, so you want to see us today.
Not too bad.
But if you don't want to see us, don't do this. But if you go, when you click play, if you don't see us right away, you also need to click live, and then you'll be able to see us. Even better, though, what I would love to have people do, at the BBS site, there is a link to the Zoom site, and that's what we're on here. It's like a giant teleconferencing, and this being Party Friday, why not go ahead, click Zoom. You can be on in video and audio there. And the other thing you can do, we've just added this, you can also text us. You just go in the Zoom, when you link into the Zoom, you go to the bottom left hand of the screen. There's going to be a video camera and a microphone. So you click those on so we can all see each other. But there's also a little chat thing. And if you click on the chat, you can text us and we'll read your text live. So,
and since it's a Party Friday, and when I was younger and a bachelor, I always used Friday to find dates for Saturday.
We always go here.
We have to go here. if you kind of you're available, do the Zoom button. People can kind of, hey, man, that person's just my type.
Chuck is trying to.
I know we can make a lot of money.
Entrepreneurial
somehow,
spirit. Somehow. He wants a conservative dating site.
Yeah, well, who wants to date a liberal these days?
Hey, without further ado, let us go to Steve House, who has graciously agreed to be on the show with us. Steve House, one of the GOP candidates for CD6.
He's also former chairman of the Republican Party. Was it COO or some title up to when he decided to run?
Head honcho.
Head honcho, or it's, it was, but and he's run for governor, and he's a real heavyweight in the Republican Party. So Steve, so great to have you. Oh, one other thing, he's my hero on weight loss, because he's lost an enormous amount of weight, and most important, he kept it off. So he's a hero.
There you go, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Yeah, when you called me a heavyweight, I thought, I got to go see Chuck. I'm not any heavyweight.
No, you look great. And we're going to apologize. Our dog is barking. Rev is home from school today, so he's roaming around upstairs and the dog is barking. So don't be alarmed at any dog barking. Well, Steve, it was great to see you. Yeah, I saw you the other day, a couple Mondays ago, actually, at the Center-Right Coalition meeting. And, to me, I heard there, I think a
you
growing...
You can't say that, remember? You cannot
oh,
say,
I can't say what happened.
No,
okay, well, I've heard there. Okay, I apologize. But what I heard, though, is where I'm hurting other places, too. Thank you, Chuck. And that is a growing excitement in the Colorado Republican Party, the Trump campaign, the Cory Gardner campaign. And how does all of that tie into you? And what
well,
do you
they've
see?
They've made. I saw that the Senate, whatever it is for congressional ones, has upgraded it to a contender status,
right,
which means they're going to pay more attention, maybe put resources in.
So, Steve, how do you feel about all that?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, I think if you went down to the rally in Colorado Springs as I did, and you not only saw the 10,000 or so people in the arena, and I remember when we held the state assembly there back in 16. The year that Donald Trump got nominated, that we had filled that thing to the rafters. We put more people in there last week at that rally than we did when we had that state assembly, which was crazy. And then to be outside with another 10,000 people, I mean, just the energy is high. The commitment to the president is so strong. I think that helps drive us. I think we're going to see that on primary night next week with the number of votes he gets. And, of course, as you said, we made contender, which means we're in the top 30.
There's Rev in the background.
Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt. Just Steve, people, if they're watching, they just are
so wondering
in the background. But go ahead.
By being in the top 35, what that means is, first of all, there are fundraising things that happen for you online with the online fundraising stuff. And then McCarthy's hosting a fundraiser for us in Washington, D.C. in early March, where we're going to have a chance to sit with and talk with all of the members of the current House of Representatives and a bunch of the senators. And we'll be talking to them about our game plan is. We'll talk about our new healthcare plan, things like that. So it's really about exposure and intensity. And we get poll data. We get opposition research data that we don't have to pay for, that we wouldn't have had if we hadn't made this level of status.
Right. And no, and that's just great. Hey, and if folks want to, Steve is great about taking questions, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008 to call in. You know, let me ask
you. Well, I'm just hoping the president comes up north for a rally in Adams County or somewhere in CD6 or otherwise.
Right, to help you out. Yeah.
Because, well, what it does is it gets you, you know, an enormous amount of information of all the people who come or not Democrats, who are Democrats but like Trump, so would probably vote for whoever the CD6 candidate is. You get independents who are pro Trump and therefore likely to vote for you in CD6. So if you get one up here, somewhere up north, I mean, I think you'd be able to call a lot of information for the campaign.
It'll be interesting because I know he's going to come here more than once. We believe that he's committed to somewhere between 3 and 4 visits. The issue with where CD6 is you got to have an arena to hold the people. And, you know, you got one downtown. You got one in Boulder. You got one up at the Budweiser Center. You've got one at in Westminster. I don't know where we would do it. I mean, I'd like to do it in Adams County and you know, bordering Aurora. We're just going to figure out how to do it. I mean, I don't think the Gaylord's nearly big enough. I was going to say,
what about the Gaylord? No, I guess you're right.
But Westminster is Adams County, so.
Yeah, you need the Westminster part. Well, you know what? That's a minor thing. That's a great problem to have, right? Is where is a big enough place?
Westfield. They got some farmland out in CD6.
Where's a big enough place? Well, you know, we have talked with your one of the other candidates for the
Casper Stockholm.
Casper Stockholm. But wanted to give you a chance, too, to talk about some of your policies. I mean, again, I think a lot more people are probably paying a lot more attention to your race right now. So why don't you explain some of the things that you want folks to know? Pretty open-ended question there.
Yeah, so I start with a foundation on policy that says if it's not constitutional, I'm not interested. I wouldn't support it. So the Constitution has to be the guide. I think the big policy changes are we're introducing a new healthcare plan where the president has written an executive order on transparency in healthcare. It's for 70 items that HHS specifies, 230 that hospitals have to do. We're going to push that number to more like 700 because we think transparency is a big issue. We also want drug pricing to be transparent. And there's a difference between someone telling you that insulin costs $408 a month and them telling you that $300 of that $408 is going to middlemen that we don't need anymore, and therefore we should really be transparent about it. There's a lot of things going on with that plan. There'll be a much larger HSAs. Ted Cruz is working on a bill that we're a party to that will help HSAs so people can buy their non-hospital-based care at a much lower rate. And then we're going to change regular health insurance, the way it is written under Obamacare, back to indemnity insurance. So healthcare is one policy. Education is another. We have to change the business model. We can't be paying tuition on research and development inside of universities. We need to grade degree programs. We've got formulas to do that so that people can choose between colleges on the best degree based on how soon you get a job, what your income is, and your student loan will only be allowed to be a factor based on how well that degree program grades so that we don't end up with debt that we can't use. We think immigration, you know, not only do you have to enforce the rule of law and continue with the wall, but immigration needs to be an opportunity, not a problem. And there's some things that we're going to do on immigration to help make that happen.
And, what does that mean? It's an opportunity. What does it's an opportunity mean?
So clearly you have to shut off illegal immigration. That is absolutely required. However, that doesn't mean that America shouldn't go out and recruit people from around the world to fill certain jobs that are open right now that our businesses are struggling to fill, because we really need to be able to fill those jobs. Businesses can't be successful if they have a lot of openings and they can't do their job. So,
well, isn't in one of the little pushback on that? I mean, that's what Mike Lee is pushing for, massive immigration from India. Ken Buck is doing the same thing. I remember when I got to law school, San Francisco decided to have its sanitation workers going to pay them $60,000 a piece, and all kinds of lawyers applied.
Journalists,
everyone else. If the wages go up, people will take degrees to follow them. If you flood the market with Indian graduates and all around the world, you'll depress those wages. And we've seen it with Disney, which is about as big a company as there is, that they went out there. Yeah, they went out there and made the people, trained the people replacing them, or they wouldn't give them any severance. I mean, the U.S. companies are not beloved these days, I can tell you. And if immigration is going to be an opportunity and destroy our college graduates, if there's plenty of Americans graduating every day from our universities, if they're incentivized to fill in those jobs, they'll fill it. Just like all of a sudden everybody's going into security, computer security, and everybody's getting a degree in it. So I really hope that isn't just one more thing to depress wages, depress wages for college graduates. God knows we need less people taking I took history, but who needs it, right? Really, I mean, on the outside, and that the president, and he did, he got an argument with, I think it was Laura Ingraham, on that exact point, that, why don't, you know, your thing is to make America first, not make India first, and Mike Lee is doing that.
No, I understand what Mike Lee's doing. My perspective on it is not mass immigration, but very targeted immigration. So you're right. I mean, if we... societies prosper when they have more engineers. And I don't know why that's the case, but you can look through history. And if your immigration, or if your engineering degrees fall off, then societies tend to fall off with them. It isn't always a linear depression. But yeah. The one way you can do that is you go back to the education reform and say, look, we're going to rate engineering degrees. And you're going to find out, I mean, some of the degrees, even at CU, where you take a chemistry class, that is so difficult and so debilitating, it rules a bunch of people out. You know, those degrees will get graded. I think that'll help us train more people, educate more people. But where we need to do targeted immigration, I think we should. I just don't think the word mass is ever going to enter my vernacular because I don't like it that way. And lastly, I think that a debt structure where we have a debt break, we potentially use something like the penny plan. We got to do something about deficits and debt. I think the deficit, if you look at the healthcare plan we have, we're forecasting we're going to cut somewhere around $1 to $1.5 trillion out of the healthcare costs. Some of that comes out of the federal budget. Some of that comes out of the American people's pockets. I think that will help the deficit, but I still think we have a longer-term plan we have to deal with on the debt.
We have an endemic deficit problem. It's not that I think Donald Trump wanted to have trillion-dollar deficits. But as long as you have the filibuster rule, you can't get a budget with more than 60 votes, even if you control the House and the Senate, you're going to have a war. And the war is usually solved, or the peace comes, when the Republicans just pour money into the defense industries and the Democrats pour money into the social programs. And so that's the compromise they make. And it's the only compromise that's ever has occurred for 50 years, and it's the only one they'll ever compromise as long as you have 50 people required to pass a budget. The Democrats can have 47 or whatever it is, and they can make sure that the budget doesn't pass.
And it has been for almost two decades, right?
Yes, that's right.
Let me ask you, we're talking to Steve House, a GOP primary candidate in CD6. What about Jason Crow being one of the stars in the Democrat Party for the impeachment that went nowhere? What do you, when you're out on the campaign trail, are people talking about that? Do they care about that? Or what are you hearing?
Oh, they not only do they care about it, but poll data says they care about it. I mean, there's two ways to approach it. One was, how is his performance? And I think everything from Professor Dumbledore to some of the other claims he made about bribery made him look bad. I think the other issue is, you know, 44,000 people a month are going bankrupt from medical bills. There's all these problems, none of which were getting solved because they were screwing around with impeachment. And I think both of those things will be major factors in the election.
Well, you know, there are two things I think that the Republicans have to approach, not just tangentially, but directly. One is for people with pre-existing conditions, so they're going to have to figure that out. Two is the cost of colleges. It's obscene, and they're going to have to figure that out. You know, one of the ways you can do it.
It doesn't have to be obscene, though.
Well, it does have to be obscene unless you do something about it. Either cut the loan program so not everybody can go to college on the scene rates and end up being $100,000 in debt with a history degree. Or they're going to have to do things like, and I think it's more a state level, but say, no. No CU, you cannot say somebody takes advanced placement and you're not going to recognize it. Advanced placement ought to cut off, you know, when I went to school, I cut off a year and a half of my university with advanced placement. So you can cut off a huge percentage of college costs as long as kids can go to AP classes. And they'll be, if you have an idea that it's going to cost your parents or yourself on the borrowing basis.
I do get some of it done at Front Range Community College, things like that.
Yeah, I know that, our think tanks are not beloved, at least by Tucker Carlson, but boy, I wish somebody would figure out, okay, let's get it down. So when I graduated from college in Vanderbilt, it cost a lot. costs a lot. I mean, a community college costs more than Vanderbilt costs when I went to school.
So if you think about this, Chuck, I'll just give you a simple perspective on what we're planning on doing. Number one is every year the tuition cost at a university that does research, in other words, they're creating right. knowledge. I don't have a problem with creating knowledge and research, but it drives up tuition costs by 10% a year because those programs are not standalone, self-sufficient programs.
Mm, right.
So if you go to Western Governors or DeVry or someplace like that, you have a lower rate because you don't have. The second thing is, think about a journalism degree, one at CU, one at CSU. Your simple formula says, okay, so how many people graduated from the program that entered it? How long did it take? What was the cost to confer the degree? How many of them got a job in the first 90 days? What was their two-year salary structure? What was the student satisfaction level? And what was the employer's perspective on people coming out with that degree? And then you give it a grade. Let's say it's 75% at CU and 98% at CSU. What happens then is you can only get a 75% of the total federal student loan maximum for that degree if you go to CU, and you get a 98% of it if you go to CSU. That's going to make students make different decisions because they're going to go to schools that have a higher grade to be able to fund the program. If you eliminate the $2,500 a year that kids are putting in their student loan for their own health care, if they're on Medicaid, for example,
yes.
yeah. universities won't yeah. accept Medicaid, so you're financing $10,000 or $12,500. Pretty soon, what you have are degree programs that have value associated numbers, and they get stronger, and the ones that aren't good enough have to change how they compete. And lastly, if you're taking zoology or philosophy for a degree, the grading on those degrees are going to be fairly low, and you're going to have to think twice about it.
Yeah,
right.
It's a good analogy. Only, you know, slight problem is CU got rid of his journalism school.
Yeah, no,
so he wouldn't be able to have that anymore.
But see, if you're right, it sounds like this is a crazy concept, but it sounds like what you're talking about is making an education system that works for the students, not the faculty and the staff and everybody. And that seems crazy. It seems crazy, but that seems to me like that's what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, why should students in their tuition be paying for a swimming pool the shape of your, you know, logo that costs $10 million, you know, instead of, you know, what you're there for, which is to acquire knowledge, you know, and that's what we're going to be looking at is how do you get individual degrees graded so that people can make smart decisions because the taxpayers are on the hook for all those loans. And if I'm going to be on the hook for a philosophy loan, I want to know that student's going to make enough money to pay it back.
You know, yeah, I'll tell you a story. It was when I was a kid and when I went to college, I was going to major in philosophy, right? And back then, college didn't cost very much, but I was the oldest of five. And my dad said, I'll pay for you to go to college, except he said, not if you're going to be a philosophy major. He said, if you're going to be a philosophy major, you might as well stay home and live in the basement and we'll just go from there. So we have Antifa people sneaking around behind us here in the background. So let me ask you a final question then. If folks want to get hold of you, how do they do that? Where can they get hold of you? Any big events coming up that you want to let people know about?
Well, first and foremost, caucus is obviously coming up on the 7th. We're doing both emails with information and robocalls on that around the area. You can always reach us at House for Colorado, HOUSEFOR Colorado.com. My email is just shouse@houseforcolorado.com. And we're out every day, multiple times a day. Obviously, the fundraising piece has been a big positive, and it has to continue to be so. So they'll find us at events. We'll definitely be at caucus and assemblies around the district, and people can reach out to me directly.
Well, let me give you one more piece of advice. Of advice that you know you'll be rightly ignored. But you know, if Colorado Republicans can't ballot harvest, they cannot win. Ballot harvesting costs, according to the Democrats, I know, gave him about 7 to 8 points, which means Brockler would have won. Walker Stapleton would not. They credit ballot harvesting with their tremendous 2018. They won't tell that to the public, but everything. And so unless you have a great ballot harvesting one, it'll be almost impossible to win. Well, I don't know. You got to do it. I mean, everybody can go, well, I think I've never seen a Republican ballot harvesting. So if that occurs, it'd be nice because it's tough. You can't just go there election day and say, hey, got your ballot. There's some Republican who votes all the time. You got to go to, you know, a male student, 25, who really doesn't like to vote, doesn't care about voting. You got to go to them 2 months ahead, say, hi, I know your kids, everything else. Great to see you. And then when you come by another time, and then the third time is when you come up with their ballot, they're happy to see you. And we know it because we've, you know, Julie had a daughter here and they were here four or five.
She's a Democrat.
Yeah, she's a Democrat. Halloween, they were here in costumes. I mean, it was incredible. And so, you know, I think you're going to have enough money. Hopefully you've raised about $500,000, I think, to really have at least try to do about everything.
Yeah. We actually have it. Chuck, it's a great point, because one of the advantages of having funding is we've, first of all, hired a leader for election integrity in the district. I mean, Joan Lopez is the one that got an order from the state, our Secretary of State, and in that order, she writes a response telling everybody that voters can decide her fate in 2021. I'm like, Joan, you don't actually run again until 2022. I don't know why you would write that and put that in a statement. I have a lot of concerns about somebody who got in trouble again. So yes, we have that. And the second thing is, we actually had a meeting yesterday on the subject of ballot harvesting, making sure that people understood the rules, what the turnout model looks like. But it literally, how many ballots can you carry to a ballot box in favor of people who can't get them there themselves? Where do you find them? What are the most likely locations that need help? We're already actually having conversations, and we're going to put talent on the field to do that, and we're going to pay them.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Thank you so much. All right, hey, yeah. Steve House, House for CD6, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend, and let's stay in touch as we go through this.
Great to talk to you, Steve.
Always. Thank you, guys. See you.
All right, thank you. Hey, and so people may have noticed, so Rev is off of school today. He's wandering around putting signs up.
What do they say?
I don't know. I can't. I'll have to return
around. Go look. Okay.
No, but let's bring up Ben on a couple things.
I'm going to go look.
All right. Chuck is going to go look.
Swear word.
Yeah. So don't blame us. I don't think he knows how to spell swear words. We've got Ben Nicholas here with us. I want to let folks know you can go, and we'd love to have you join us on Party Friday, like I said, at Zoom. So just go to chuckandjulie.com. It's going to take you to the BBS website, which will then give you a link to Zoom, and you can join us video, audio, too. So, Ben, hey, thank you for your time this Friday afternoon.
Yeah, that's, I just wanted to, you know, I missed the last couple of days. We had some family friend who passed away, so we've been kind of busy with that.
I'm sorry.
So I wanted to jump in and just listen, and that's what I was doing to Steve's presentation there. I think that that Chuck hit it right on the head when he said about ballot harvesting. We are so lax in that. I looked at some of the numbers that just coming off the top of my head. There are, if I remember correctly, George Antonopoulos put some numbers together for us, and that was appearing, I believe it was the 2018 race, right?
Right. Correct.
So the Republican Party, or all Republicans, if you will, they spent about $86,000 or $83,000 to do data mining and also get out, you know, the vote, if you will. The Democrats, on the other hand, they spent over $3 million for the same, for the exact same reasons. They were doing the data mining and the data harvesting. Both parties were close to receiving about $90 million in donations throughout that campaign. So it was pretty even as the money.
The money, right.
But it's how you apply the capital that makes the difference. And I've heard numerous times here where people are saying, well, you know, we just need to get out there. Well, you're not going to beat them unless you're willing to do the data harvesting at what you see here, what's going on, the numbers. I checked those numbers this morning on Tracer, and it looks like the Democrats have generated in contributions about just a little more than $800,000 so far this year. The Republicans, about $240,000, just under that. Okay. Wow. And issue committees, they have generated about $1.8 million for this year. And all others, this is including the candidates that are running out there, they're at just a little north of $4 million. So in total, you have $7 million that has been contributed, just a little more than $7 million. In 2014, just to put this in perspective for you, in 2014, the cost or total contributions and expenditures in for the Senate race, this is when Cory Gardner was running, was just a little more than $150 million. In 2016, during the presidential race, we spent a little less than $150 million. Now, when I say we, I mean in the state of Colorado.
Okay.
Okay. In 2018, which is just a gubernatorial race, right? There was just slightly less than $250 million. So that gives you some idea as to how much money is needed, right, you know, to win a race. We're in a presidential campaign. We're only a few months out. And so far, we're a whopping $800,000.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things is that in Colorado, the Dems got a lot of their money from California and outside the state.
That's right.
Republicans get almost none.
Well,
almost none.
And we've talked about this before with the Democrats. Yeah. And so if you're listening to this and you're not from Colorado, you need to be aware. If they come to your state, they being the Democrats, and they say, oh, mail-in ballots, all mail-in ballots, anything other than that is voter suppression, don't buy it, right? That was, yep, it was just a flat.
Well, mail-in ballots are called, it's a ballot harvesting.
Well, but what I mean is the mail-in ballots give them the chance better to harvest the ballots too.
Yes.
Without mail-in ballots, they're all stuck in the, you know, in, when it's much more of a level playing field. So that's a thing. I mean, if you're not in Colorado and you're like, well, what does this mean? What it means is the Democrats are going like locusts, literally state by state, changing the rules to benefit them. And the Republicans, Ben, like you're saying, sometimes the money is there. It's how you're spending it that makes all the difference. And we need to spend it to play by the new rules that the Democrats have created.
I think that's the issue, is that you have seen how wasteful the Republicans have been in using that or applying that capital, and how smart the Democrats have been.
Well, let me tell you this. You know where the Republicans are spending it in Colorado, and this is what needs to stop. They're spending it on stupid mass mailings where the consultants make money. They're spending it on stupid TV ads where the consultants makes money. It's that kind of thing. You know, the Republicans got to not only be smarter about the rules, but they also got to figure out that, you know, whoever, I'm sorry, no offense to if you're a consultant out there, but if you're not telling your client, you know, maybe we need to, because I get a cut if I'm a consultant on the TV ads and all that other stuff, right? And my little side firm does the mail-in ballots or does the mailings. You know,
I think Republicans just refer that activity as somewhere of a transfer of wealth.
Yeah. Yes. And so we aren't getting any.
it's probably the worst possible way to market is these slick brochures.
Well, beginning, they're pretty effective. You know, early in the campaign, A1. But when you get ones coming up to, you know, 5 or 10 days before the election, and you get 10 more, it's worthless. They are worthless. But who knows? I mean, you know.
Well, here we're gonna switch gears. Ben, stick around. Yeah. If you want, we've got Karen Cataline. You saw her. She was kind of getting ready there. She is at CPAC, and she is our roving reporter.
CPAC.
Hey, right, Karen.
Well, I'm just going to mute.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Karen, you on mute. Hey there. Good afternoon.
I am doing great. Good afternoon. This is my first jaunt with video, and if you can see in the background,
we
can.
Who do you see? Who do you see there?
Well, we can't see.
I don't have my glasses on. Who is it?
Okay. Well, right now, as we speak, the guy that took your slot on Kanye West, Sebastian Gorka.
Oh, boo!
Oh,
boo!
No,
he's fine. He's fine.
He's talking to Brandon Straka right now.
Oh,
okay.
The walkaway guy.
And yes. And so I wanted to get him on camera. So you can see that you probably will be taking all his audience at the 3 o'clock hour.
All they got to do is just listen. If you want to know what's up. So what is it? Why don't you tell folks what you're doing there? Because you've actually had a pretty exciting few days here.
Well, I've been busy. I don't know how exciting. It is exhausting. I'm just trying to give you a little background. I'm on media, on Radio Row here. This is something new for me to like show you what Radio Row looks like.
Yeah.
And I've been broadcasting for Main Street Radio Network because I've had the pleasure of filling in for them pretty frequently. This is a guy, Alan Nathan, who has been doing talk radio for about 22 years. So he has a big following, a lot of Salem media networks, mostly on the East Coast. And so I got to fill in and sit there in Radio Row and grab guests. Well, and I got a whole bunch of interviews for my new time slot spouting off on Fridays. So I got like 2 hours worth of broadcasts for that as well, which is pretty cool. CPAC, I haven't been here in about 9 or 10 years, I think. I went as a participant for about 3 years, three different events as a participant. It has grown massively. But most of the guests that I interviewed said there's something really special and different happening here. Because, as I pointed out, we've got the media guy now. We've got the media master. They don't. And they're on the ropes. Granted, socialism isn't yet on the ropes. But they're on the ropes. They're scrambling. They're going bananas. I have some concerns about that. I just hope Democrats don't suddenly fall for the idea that there's a moderate in that bunch.
Right.
Like when I was reading a thing, it said Amy Klobuchar is no moderate. She's just a boring liberal, a boring progressive.
and there's some truth to that. Yeah. They're all going to claim they're moderates, and nothing could be further from the truth. And it's hilarious to get them to hear them sound like conservatives when we know they're not.
Right.
Jumping right into issues because all you see is lots of noise here, basically.
No, that's fine. It's kind of cool. It's like being a TV reporter doing a live shot. That's what you kind of we used to call those walk and talks, show and tells.
So you can see, I mean, everybody's here practically, not everybody.
We're not there.
You're over my right shoulder. And it's very interesting, too. I found out this is the first time I've ever got to do media. That you sit way, 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 way the hell on the back and you watch TV.
Yeah.
I can be at home.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, at least you're not in the snow. Now, you would be recreating my job if there was a giant blizzard coming down on you and the producer was saying, wrap it up. So
I know. Well, I mean, you could say that to me.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, not yet. So let me, we won't keep it real long because I know you've got so much going on.
No, I mean, that's okay. I mean, whatever. Okay. Whatever I can offer, it takes you a day to kind of get your bearings. This is a massive place.
CPAC has evolved, thankfully. I mean, it was something controlled by the Republican establishment. I mean, the Bushies controlled it.
And Mitt Romney got booed there this time, I guess?
No, they disinvited him. Right. They disinvited him.
I mean, yeah, there was a poster that said, "We're so glad that Romney got disinvited to CPAC."
Yeah. Well, they used to disinvite people like Pam Geller. Now they're disinviting people like Mitt Romney, which is a big improvement. A big improvement on
Alex Jones is here. Who's the guy? I mean, there's so many names, but also who is here? And, of course, I haven't got to see most of it because I've been too busy broadcasting on Radio Row. But he showed up. I saw him walk by. The guy for whom the phony FISA warrant was gathered was
Papadopoulos.
Carter Page
is here.
Wow,
cool.
Page is here. It's a very, very interesting thing, and of course Donald Trump will be here tomorrow. Security is insane. And that was for Pence as well.
Talk to us about the atmosphere there. I know I remember covering, and I think I was covering it. I don't think I was as a reporter, right? A TV reporter, not as a talk show person. One of the first Western conservative summits and Trump was there and like no one was there. No one even cared. Right. And people
I remember that.
And it was boring. So talk to me about it. I got to imagine that it is, as you were kind of hitting that earlier, there's an energy there, an excitement. Am I right?
Oh gosh, it is. And the feeling that I get more than any other is that grassroots people, even though I'm doing media now, I'm still a grassroots person. And so are you guys, really.
Right.
Because we have the finger on the pulse of the people who actually brung Donald Trump to the dance.
Yeah.
Now, we brought him there. We're the ones that are going to have to defend him. We're the ones that are going to have to get him over the finish line more than anyone else, although there's more people helping now. And I think that we've watched him teach people how to fight back.
Yes, absolutely.
More than anything else, people have been praying and begging and begging for somebody to fight back against the lies, the deceit, the absolute turning our culture upside down, and saying, you know, why are you being duped by this? And again and again and again, Donald Trump exposes the lies. He exposes the fraud. And he's got him on the ropes. I don't know. Yeah. And also, the great thing here is that they've gone to the heart of the issue for once. You know, CPAC used to be a little bit stuffy.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, the theme of CPAC is America versus socialism.
Yeah, good strategy. Yeah. Very good strategy. Because, you know, like you say, what did I was reading something? They said, well, Bernie, he's a Democrat. He's a Democrat socialist. Oh, I'm like, oh, good. Yes, he's a Democrat socialist.
Just the same like thing. Denmark. And Denmark kept going, no, we're not a socialist. We're a welfare. We do have a lot of welfare.
That is such nonsense. And with all respect to Sean Hannity, and I hate to say I don't watch him all the time, because after all day on politics, I like to watch something fluffy like The Bachelor or something. But Hannity has been on the wrong page for a while, and I hope he changes. He's calling him, what is it, Bernie? He's calling him Bolshevik Bernie.
Oh, yeah, communist.
I just talk back to the TV, and I say, why are you doing that?
Right.
Don't destroy him. Let the Democrats destroy him. But I would love for us to run against Bernie. Wouldn't you, Chuck? I mean, I would love that.
Well, I would, because not because I think he's the easiest candidate. I think Biden would be easier because he's senile and he's just, you know, he doesn't know where he was in South Africa. I didn't know
he's running
arrested.
For Senate.
He's running. He's going to first.
Kind of like John Hickenlooper, Senate president.
But I think it gives you the choice, right? I mean, Bernie isn't. Bernie says, you know, I'm a socialist, okay, democratic socialist, and I want massive government spending, and I want to alter the economy totally. And, you know, he is the real thing. And you kind of go, okay, you got a choice. Because as you pointed out, the other Democrats are just kind of hiding in the weeds. They really know better. But with Bernie.
Let's not mince words. The reason Democrat strategists like James Carville don't like Bernie Sanders is because Bernie Sanders isn't lying as much as the rest.
Right. Good way of saying it.
If they were against socialism, they would have said something during the Obama years.
You know, here's the thing, too. People are freaking out about the stock market, right? I get all that. But can you imagine what the stock market would do if Bernie Sanders were president? It would talk about an impact on the economy, right?
Yeah. It would be an economic pandemic.
Yes,
there
exactly.
You go. There you
exactly.
Go.
Well,
it's pretty crazy. Now, it's also funny when I talk to some people here, I still think we have to teach Republicans how to talk in sound bites. I mean, not for interviews like what we do, but they're trying to talk to millennials. And millennials, as you probably know better than me, Julie, they think in memes and they think in sound bites.
Yeah.
And so you can't explain the Laffer curve to people who don't even understand America and what America is about. So my favorite one right now, I'm collecting these slogans against socialism. But my favorite right now is ask them, how come there's cheese in the mousetrap? That's it. That's all you got to do. Yeah. Why do they put cheese in the mousetrap? Does the mouse just willingly go into the trap and put his neck down? No. He lures you with cheese. Hello.
Cheese. Free cheese.
Right.
Free cheese.
Yeah. And the other thing that just absolutely bugs me, not that I'm on a roll here, is is when Republicans constantly say, but we can't afford it. See, we would really do this if only we could afford it.
Right. We haven't progressed that far yet. We really want to do it, but we just haven't gotten there yet.
Here's a perfect example.
Even if it were free, it would not be
a good idea.
Here's the thing, and this I get to credit Rush Limbaugh, I think, who said it, where he was talking about Joe Biden saying, well, I visited the projects, right? And he said, okay, so the question is, 30 years later, how many of those people are still in the projects, or how many of those people did you get out of the projects?
You got them all.
You're absolutely right.
You're codependent. But you have a vested interest in keeping people in poverty.
Exactly. So. The Democrats have zero interest in helping you. They just say, we visit the project, so we get you. They don't say, okay, you hold my hand. I'm going to do everything I can to get you out of here, right? And that's not going to include more and more and more free
well,
stuff.
Well, here's a big problem. If you go to any university, it was true when I went to university. If you go to the English department, they're almost all Democrats, right? I mean, the Republicans are in engineering and other things. I mean, how many times do I want to attack the TV when Sean Hannity says the unverified Steele dossier? You go, no, it is not. It is the debunked conspiracy theory.
It's a lie.
It's a lie. It's not unverified, which means we just haven't been able to say one way or the other.
That's like saying unverified that the world is flat. No, it is.
I mean,
it's verified.
Lose these word battles endlessly. I mean, the Democrats spend all the time, okay, climate, you know, warming. No, we can't. Global warming doesn't work because, you know, when it gets cold out, they won't think. I know, climate change. Then we go, they spend all their time thinking about words. I mean, we need to get some wordsmiths. And that's what Frank Luntz said.
Are people in general, let's face it, political theater is not their strong point.
Right.
But
right.
When one person like Hannity says, but we can't afford it, they all say that and they don't think what they're saying. What they're saying is the only thing that won't be free in socialism, and of course it'll only be crumbs until you're poor and you're eating your dog, but the only thing that won't be free in socialism is you.
Yeah.
You won't be free. What's your freedom worth? What's it worth to you?
If you get free university, what you get is a University of Mexico in Mexico City. And it just made the degree worthless. It was worthless. So you got to go free, but you're going to spend 4 years or 3 years or whatever.
Why are you guys on here?
Oh, my gosh.
Why aren't you all here? Why is she doing all the work and you guys enjoying yourself? What city are they calling from?
Colorado.
Oh, that's right. That's a nice place, Colorado.
Sir, we don't have a car, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Let her talk. Karen, that was your first.
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Let me tell her something. Let me tell her one thing. Our friend, you just let go, Rod Gregorovich. And I sent the president. I did the sign that said, thanks, Mr. President, and I brought it here for him. Thank you guys for getting Rod Gregorovich out of Colorado. We love him.
He wasn't Littleton. You're right.
So I'm here to tell people that you're going to give the president the 20%.
Karen, this is your first shot harassment.
You got it.
He touched me.
Touch your elbow. It's like Faith Winter.
What can we say? It's Party Friday.
Party Friday.
And this is how it is at CPAC.
Yeah.
I must say, you handled that extraordinarily well. I was at one doing a live show where the other reporter, she like elbowed the guy in the gut and she said, this is my microphone. So
that's a better approach.
You know what I've learned? What I've learned when you have any kind of a mic, and partly you taught me this, Julie. You want to talk to the people who don't want to talk to you, and you don't want to talk to the people who do want to talk to you.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
And the other thing, never let go of the microphone yourself. Never hand somebody else the microphone.
Yeah. Oh, now I'm in the dark. You know, I mean, other people are.
Hey, listen, it's clear. We're going to let you go. What else is going on there? And tell us about your new time slot.
Oh, thank you. I moved my time slot for Spouting Off to noon Mountain Time, 2 p.m. Eastern, so that because I was so pleased and blessed to be able to be picked up by my first network called Keystar Talk Radio Network. And, of course, the name of the game in talk radio is syndication. So I'm working on getting some more. So if I want them to do my show and repeat it, which they will on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock on K-Star Network, I got to do a show on Friday to do the week's news, so it's more current.
Well, that makes it great, because then people have, you know, noon to one, and then they can go right to the, you know, Chuck and Julie show, and vice versa. So it's perfect.
Noon, exactly. They can, you know, my goal is to fill up the slots between noon and three with other conservatives, and then you'll be like the main event.
That's right. Won't be the main event.
Or rather, we'll just have conservatives all day on PBS Radio Station 1.
There you go. There you go. Karen, thank you for your time. You did a great job there. You were amazing.
You guys are a sight for sore eyes.
All right. Take care, Karen.
Thank you to Karen Cadline there.
Bye.
Bye-bye. If you want to call in, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Another thing you can do is go to the chuckandjulie.com website. That's going to send you to the BBS website. You can click on Zoom. You can join us live with video and audio, or you can just kind of turn the little camera off, and you can text us as well under the chat screen. So one of the other things, Karen did good. She did a very good job. That's great. I got to tell you, that's really disconcerting when you're talking, you're focusing, and then people are doing weird stuff up here. She was photobombed. We've got Reb photobombing us.
Yeah.
You can tell it's party Friday.
I did check what he wrote, but his handwriting is so bad, I couldn't tell what it said.
Then I'll teach him handwriting now. So Chuck, we wanted to talk, and here Chuck and I disagree a little bit. Want to see what you
debate.
Guys think.
We're having a debate.
Coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
Chuck is wrong. I'm right. No, I'm kidding. Well, I'm not kidding. But
just, also if you're a regular listener to our program, the key is Chuck is almost never wrong.
I mean, at this point, when we go into the debate, do you guys see what Chuck is doing? This is like riding an airplane with him. It's going over, over, over. So, Chuck, I'm going to draw a little line. You cannot go. Chuck, you scooch over the
size
line.
Matters.
Size matters. You're going to see me take a tumble here. So you cannot cross this line.
Okay, sure.
I'll let you go first.
All right. Well, you know, the coronavirus has two aspects to it. One is just a medical aspect to it, which is it's a flu. It's an influenza, and it kills five times more likely than the normal influenza.
Is that true? I thought it was.
No, five times more likely.
I'm number one. I'm raising some skepticism about that, but keep going.
And so the president has to do two things. He has got to be incredibly on top of it, but it's also political. People actually perceive that he's very much on top of it. And the other part, and you hate to take Rahm Emanuel, but let no crisis go unhindered. I mean, this is a chance for Trump to do a lot of things he couldn't normally do. And for example, we have none of the N95 masks are made in the United States. None. And it's the only mask that really works. It's one they use.
They make them in China.
They make them in China, and we've only got, I don't know, a supply of 90,000 of them, which sounds like a lot, but you don't use it 2 days. I mean, you know, you only use it one day, and then you have to put another mask on for the next day and stuff. And don't let them lie to you. N95 masks work. Now, you got to put them on properly and all that. You can't touch them after you're done, because they've stopped all the coronaviruses.
Right. You have to hurry up. I don't have to hurry up.
I've got plenty of time. and so they do work. And if you can stockpile them. They just don't want them to go too rare. and so the president's got to, you know, none of the drugs are made in the United States anymore. So it's a chance to bring a lot of that industry back to the United States on the basis of the coronavirus. And he ought to do it. He's also got to do other things like mandate the Josh Hawley bill. Support that, which requires various items here in the United States, requires you have the testing facilities. One of the problems is it's very hard to know the difference if you've got coronavirus or you just got influenza B or something. In fact, you know, one is deeper, but it's very hard to tell. So you get it, and, you know, should you be tested? Well, if you're in Colorado, you can't be tested. There's no way to be tested for the coronavirus. So they got to get testing centers all up. He has to act it like an emergency. George Bush's problem with Katrina, I'm not sure he could have done anything different, but stupid enough to take a picture of himself flying over the city, which was in agony. It was just dumb. So he's got to treat it like it's a huge concern. And he's got to overdo it a little bit. It's better to overdo it a little bit than underdo it. I think the United States, from everywhere you read, the United States has done a good job of containing it. But, you know, just study the 1918 Spanish influenza. It didn't start in Spain, but that's what they call it. And find out how it started on a pig farm in Kansas and spread out over the world. Well, so it's to take the position, which is Julie's position. As a
no, I get to say my own position, not you. I already told you.
Who cares? We don't worry about it.
That's not my position.
Let the people die.
Not my position at all. All right,
let me get the other one.
No, Chuck, you've been going on for 40 minutes.
Well, 40 minutes. The other part is Julie doesn't take a flu shot.
Wait, does this bash Julie segment of the program?
No, she doesn't take a flu shot.
The 1 year I got, okay, two reasons. 1 year I took a flu shot, I got the flu. I have had the flu once. I'm 62 years old, I've had the flu.
Yeah, now you're really in the period where a shot would really do. So that person doesn't even take.
Some of that is big pharma scam. That's just my position. It's a big pharma scam.
Okay, how many people die from regular influenza? Well, I'll just ask you this, and I'll let you take it. How many people die from influenza in the United States?
I don't know.
How many people die from car wrecks?
Way more.
No, half as much. 61,000 people died of influenza last year, and 33,000 died from car wrecks.
Let me say that.
So see, that level of knowledge is which mixes up. But we'll let you hear some of this.
Okay. And I'm just going to challenge you on that because of the people who died of the flu. Because I used to do this for a living with reporting, right? You take a stat and you forget to mention that person also had like just fallen off a cliff. And I mean, there are other things that go in.
The most vulnerable.
Let me just finish. I don't think that 61,000 absolutely healthy people suddenly keeled over of the flu.
That's not the statistic. How many people died of the influenza?
All right. Here's what I think. I don't totally disagree with you in that I think that perception is important. And I think if I were the president, I would be making a big deal about the fact that, number one, you got these whack job Democrat candidates who are saying open borders, open borders, open borders. It's like, this is exactly why we need to have secure borders, right? When Elizabeth Warren is like, that's cut the wall funding and give it to Planned Parenthood so we can study coronavirus. The president needs to say, see, these people are crazy. This is what they want to do. And this is why we need secure borders. Number two, I do agree with you that I think if you're the president, this is a perfect time to say, this is why we need to be independent. We need to have our own energy, right? So forget all, again, these whack job Democrats who want to get rid of fracking and oil and gas. Yeah, what are we going to do then, right? We need to be independent as much as possible here in the United States. And I absolutely do agree with you on that, that if I were him, I'd be using this to be pushing, bringing some of this stuff back more, and then put the Democrats in the hot seat in Congress and say, you know, what are you guys against making masks in the United States for some reason? What's that about? The only place I think really where I disagree with you a little bit is that in terms of perception, and, you know, call us, especially if you agree with Julie, 888-627-6008.
Trouble is nobody out there does.
I think that no matter what the president does, the Democrats are weaponizing this, right? The Democrats, what does Trump have going on right now that's really good for him? The economy. So the Democrats, everything they can do to scare people, to worry people, to rattle the stock markets, the financial world, they're going to do. I mean, I got to say, you look at CNN, what do they say? Because Mike Pence is opposed to abortion, he shouldn't be in charge of this because he doesn't believe in science. It's like, wait a minute, you're opposed to abortion, and from there you don't believe in science. And then from that, now they're not handling it. I just think the president, no matter what he does, they're gonna weaponize it also. So I think final point. I think you just want to be really careful, I feel, if you're out there like in listener world, to think, oh, Trump's not doing enough. Be careful. Stop and look at what he has done and ask yourself, well, what more could he do? And don't just buy into the you know, corporate media hype that we're all going to die in America because of Donald Trump.
I'm not sure where you disagreed with me, but let's get Ben back on. Ben, turn back on and do you agree with Julie, who agreed with me during that whole segment? Before the show, she totally disagreed with me. We get on the screen, it's kind of like, well, where's the disagreement? I mean,
that's kind of what I was wondering, if there really was a disagreement.
Yeah, well, there was.
That's because
hour ago.
We have such harmony that even the most.
She evolves very quickly. Yeah. Very quickly.
Well, you know, I remember probably about 2 months ago when, as you guys know, my wife was an emergency room nurse for 40 years. And I remember a couple of months ago when they announced that there was this virus is going around and they had now quarantined the Hunan province in China. Right. And because they had almost 300 deaths. And I thought, red flags went off for me at that moment. I thought, wait a minute, you know, and I did some research as well. And so what I saw was there was an average of about 30,000 people who die annually here in the United States of influenza.
61,000.
That was last year? But the average is 30,000 is what I saw. Okay. But even
675 died internationally.
Right.
Almost 700,000 people died internationally.
And in the Hunan province, the population is roughly around 60 million people. And so that's when red flags went off. Wait a minute, you're quarantining 60 million people for the deaths of 300.
Yeah.
But yet here in the United States, we have 30,000 to 60,000 who die annually of influenza, and we haven't quarantined anybody.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is a lot more severe than what they're letting on over there. And then it's
absolutely right. I mean, you know, they quarantined that right. Princess ship. Five have already died on that ship. Five are already dead.
And they should have died.
Talking about a floating Petri dish.
Yeah.
I would be like, hey, we got Charlene on line three calling in. Hey, Charlene, good afternoon.
Oh, hi there.
Hi there.
There you go, both of you, Chuck and Julie. This is the perfect opportunity for to not let a crisis go to waste and for Trump to implement America First policy.
Yes.
You know, first of all, we should say we're bringing all manufacturing of pharmaceutical and medical equipment jobs back to America. We don't need to outsource these things. They're vital for our survival now with this crisis.
Yeah.
And then also, Julie, like you said, close the border if there is an increase in cases in South America. And not just close the border, but build a wall, that we can't have a porous border with Chinese nationals possibly coming through the border. And just implement America First. And, you know, they're screaming for, you know, Trump to take charge of this crisis. So let him take charge of it. Like, these are the things we need to do to keep America safe. So it's just the perfect opportunity.
Right.
And
you know,
I read somewhere this morning where he was talking about implementing some presidential powers.
I hope he does. You know, I found it interesting, Charlene. I was reading just before we came on the show that Turkey, given the fact that there's been an increase in coronavirus in the Middle East, has now opened its doors to Syrian refugees to go through Turkey into Europe.
And I think every country along there ought to let them through right to Germany. So you know, Angela Merkel can get another million Syrian refugees, which she's so thrilled about.
But you may not have to worry about that too much because, you know, everything that you get shipped, like from Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That stuff has little bags of air.
Oh, there you go. That's a good
one. I
just got a telescope, you know, for Rev. His birthday is on there.
Can't hear you.
They can't hear me.
Okay.
You know, as I picked up, because telescopes are not light, it said made in China. I went, ooh.
Right.
One on province. I mean, where in China was this made?
Well,
who's selling the bags of air?
And you know, I read there's not much information coming out of China now, but at the beginning, China put up a hospital within 7 days. You know, Trump should put up a factory manufacturing masks in 10 days. You know, just really, you know, get on this crisis. And then if it turns out not to be as bad as some think, then, you know, we've got America First policies implemented.
Exactly.
Well here's the deal. I mean, every world scientist says it's not whether this is the true bad pandemic, because a bad one's coming. You know, this may not be it.
This is Chuck the Optimist.
It's not the Optimist, what everyone says. You know, this is the anti-scientist here. You know, it's coming. And you better be prepared. And this one shows us we're not prepared. We don't have N95 masks. Uh-huh. We don't have the pharmaceuticals. We don't have anything. So great time, as Charlene has indicated, that implement America First, because we are going to need it when that pandemic does come. If this is not the great pandemic, there will be one coming.
All right.
Yeah, good idea, Chuck.
Definitely a reason for national security protocols here.
Yeah.
You're going to see, I think you'll see a rebound in the market. I know it's been crashing the last couple of days.
It's gone farther than I thought. So is, you know.
But it'll go.
I think you'll see a rebound in that, because you're going to see a lot of companies going to have some built-in redundancy here. They cannot rely strictly on China to produce their product.
They're
going to have to do something here.
And maybe for a change, Apple won't force us to buy a new phone every couple of years if it happens.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So, yes, Charlene, thank you for calling in. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Enjoy the show so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Want to let you know, if you came in late, you want to catch, you can catch the show. And we'll be posting it up on YouTube pretty quick. You can get all of the podcasts and the links, everything you need, one-stop shopping at chuckandjulie.com. Our thanks to our gracious producers and hosts at BBS Radio.
Don and Doug.
That'll do it for us on a Party Friday. Everyone have a great weekend.
Go party.
Go party.